Welcome, everybody, and thank you very much for this opportunity to participate in this dialogue around health literacy and the importance in general of communication. And I have the opportunity to talk a little bit about what we've learned to date around the importance of social media in all this. But I'd like to begin and acknowledge a couple other members of the health literacy team who are here. I believe Michelle Roberts, who is our Director of Communications and Marketing, and Sam Pettyjohn, our associate, both of whom work extensively across all parts of Health Literacy Missouri, but particularly around the social media, and important to recognize them. And just to point out to John Stemmel's work in terms of the high quality of effort and research that's ongoing today in Missouri around health literacy. Everything we do is evidence-based. We have a member on our team, and her job is to put the evaluation lens on everything we do around health literacy. So with that, let me see if we can get this to work. I too have no relationships to disclose, so we can continue. The plus of going last is some of this has been covered, so I'm going to pass through the definition. But I highlight capacity to obtain, and because I think when we talk about health literacy, the capacity to obtain refers to us as consumers and patients, the ability to understand this information. So I really like to point my finger at those that are creating this information, the physician who communicates it, the drug company who does the patient education. It's these people's responsibility to begin to think about creating it in a health literacy fashion so that we can understand this information. Healthcare reform, in my mind, will not succeed unless we as consumers can understand this information. So it's a really important part of the definition that oftentimes gets overlooked. What does it mean? It means that our healthcare system really caters to about 12% of us. You know, many of us are probably in this room, but for all of us, I suspect that we would have a story to tell in terms of the challenges that we have faced around health literacy, interacting with the healthcare system. Who we are, we really, in a very short period of time, have become an industry leader. We spend the majority of our time focusing on improving the health status of people in Missouri. That's our vision, our goal, our mission. But because of our work, it oftentimes takes us outside of Missouri. It takes us across the nation and other parts of the world. We currently, the European Centers for Disease Control, for example, are looking at John Stemmel's work on how do you get communication messaging at that level of on public health issues. So a good deal of our work is being paid attention to, and we feel this responsibility to do in a way that we can be helpful for people outside of Missouri. I'd just like to mention our library for those of you that have not visited our website. We have a holdings of over 10,000 health literacy workbooks, materials, articles, and the like, which is just a real gem. And for those of you that are doing research in the field, I encourage you to visit it. We have developed a very active, I wouldn't say meeting, but addressing the seven goals that we've talked about today. Again, they appear on our website. If you stop by our booth, which is 1635, we can engage you. You can see what our response is to the National Action Plan, which is quite extensive. And finally, we're a driving force behind this coalition to create a nationwide cooperative of statewide centers around health literacy. To date, most of that energy and synergy is focused in the Midwest, with states like Iowa, Arkansas, ourselves, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. And together, we are forming a coalition that will make a more powerful voice as we try to represent the citizens of this nation. So here we are. Here's our website. A screenshot. It's constantly undergoing revision. We have the luxury of having a webmaster, and again, works very closely with our team in trying to keep it current, up to date, and containing many parts that we will talk a little bit about. So our communications goals. So again, John Stemmel addressed our primary, which is to really get health literacy out to the people in Missouri so they begin to understand it. And you can see the successes that we're already having in very small ways. The importance of social media, and again, to position Health Literacy Missouri as a place for people to be able to come to for help and for information. So the toolkit that we have at our disposal include the following. And I'm going to speak at some length about Twitter, Facebook, and blogging. But because of time, I just would like to briefly tell a little bit about how we use the others. So LinkedIn is really our Rolodex of professionals, okay? Particularly as a way to get information out to physicians and other kind of healthcare providers. Our Flickr is our, we store our photos, all the events that we're involved in, our statewide summit, different types of seminars, speaking engagements and the like. We house them as part of our Flickr. Vimeo is a recent discovery and creation, something I'm pretty excited about. It's our Netflix of Health Literacy Missouri. We have 150 films on there that we have called from a variety of sources. And again, those of you that like to use video as part of your teaching and presentations, it's a terrific resource to be able to go to find videos that we think are appropriate. YouTube, we have a number of pieces around health literacy that appear there. Our listserv is what used to be called NIFL, and now links the federal government, and there are probably about 4,000 the most active health literacy thought thinkers in the world are on that daily, and from our site you can get to that. And blogging. So blogging is really, I think, the core spine of what we should be doing as social media. It's something that we can all do. We're learning about it. We made the investment in the months of October, November, and December to bring Helen Osborne on, the woman who's actually credited with starting Health Literacy Month. And she has been blogging for 3 months, and we've been learning with her in terms of audience reaction. We pay attention to the people who visit it, what they are blogging with her, what they would like to see. And what we expect to do starting in 2011 is to continue to blog, and something that we as a staff will do. We're finding new partners, not only in Missouri to do this, but outside and all across the world, and we think an important aspect of what we will do in the future. Facebook. Spend the remainder of the time talking a little bit about Facebook and Twitter, which are the two most commonly accepted forms of social media that many of us are familiar with. So Facebook really allows us to create our community. Those of you that have your own Facebook accounts, we take advantage of all the tools that Facebook has to provide for us. But for us, it's really creating this community. It's sharing the current news. We highlight our activities, but we don't try to dominate. And I think you'll see the theme for us is really about collaboration, partnership building, providing helpful information, but trying not to dominate the conversation whenever possible. Examples, you know, during Health Literacy Month in October, we were able to use it to post invitations, photos. We had a very active discussion board that was ongoing, shared media coverage that we were involved with all across Missouri, and able, again, very important to thank, to put thank you posts on there. We've found, like anything, all organizations need a personality. People appreciate being thanked, and Facebook provides a way to be able to do that. Our results, very young. I mean, we've been doing this since February. And again, you know, what might appear few active users and the like, but it continually increases. We're learning how to reach more folks. It's not just people in St. Louis. It has this whole international reach. We communicate daily, people looking for the library and coming to our Facebook from places in England, Singapore, all over the world, looking to communicate with us. And it's not just this age group of 18 to 24. I mean, there's a nice grouping of the different age groups that are able to take advantage of our Facebook page. Lessons that we've learned, people really like this personal connection to your organization. They like to see the events, the achievements, our blogs, the media coverage, and the personal stories and photos. One of the take-home lessons today is that health literacy is about the personal story. Okay, it's difficult to explain, it's hard for us to be able to get our arms around, but once you begin to tell the personal stories, people get it. Your mother, their mother, yourself, your child, or whatever, everybody has our story to tell, and we find it to be extraordinarily effective in terms of people being able to identify with health literacy. And then Twitter. Twitter's a little different. Twitter's about getting information out. It's not so much about the warm and huggy that we see with others, but it's really a way for us to distribute information, develop relationships, particularly with professional groups, around information that they find helpful. And it has really been an opportunity for us to get information out and be able to contribute to a dialogue in a growing fashion around health professionals. So you can become an expert, you can post links, you can follow up, you can connect, ask questions and the like. What we do is we try to spend perhaps 10% actually posting new tweets. For us, it's mostly retweeting, getting other information that we see that's out there into the hands of people who care about health literacy as working professionals. Lessons learned, people really like the news items, they like interesting facts. I'm sure we're tweeting as we sit here today, some of our staff and the like. If you come by our booth, again, we'll be tweeting across all of APHA. And just to give you a sense of how you do that, you know, what are the kinds of things that people are looking to see here at APHA, I think would be a really good way. We participated in what was the first, what is gonna be called health literacy chats using Twitter. It was organized by the Centers for Disease Control and we were able to participate in that. And then we held our own Twitter town hall meeting, which took place later in October. And to show you some of the results, this is our war room. This is our group that's working there. It was on October 28th. We did it for an hour and a half. And we really focused on the importance of communicating with the media and public and the importance of health literacy in mind. We had certain goals that we were trying to accomplish. We had very specific questions that we posted out there, and we were joined by some terrific people. Gary Schweitzer, who happened to be at the University of Missouri that day, I was actually off campus and in the same room with he and John, who's the publisher of Health News Review, was involved, had never done anything like this and was just amazed in terms of people getting on board and participating. And again, some other cast of characters who are well known, both in terms of social media as well as health literacy. So in that 90 minutes, we had 553 tweets. 92 people were involved. We gained 38 new followers. Our hashtag is as HealthLit, continues to be discussed today out there and mentioned on blogs, websites, and the like. So again, this Edelman rating is the person who rates number of followers on tweet. We're not exactly Lady Gaga or Snoop Dogg who are up in the 90s. But we have come from 19 to 52, which is pretty impressive, you know, in this very short period of time. And we will continue to rise. So it's a small investment. It's a big payoff. For most of it, it's just mystifying. We don't really know what it means and what those possibilities are. And for an organization who first made this enormous investment in people like John Stemmel's work, to work very intensely within the state of Missouri, and then to kind of blossom out. And it's not rocket science. Graduate students, particularly young interns and the like, who use us on a day-to-day basis, have just been instrumental within our organization, have been very cost-effective. They don't cost a lot of money, graduate students, and they teach us a lot, particularly in the use of social media around this. So we're very pleased, and for somebody who, showing my age a little bit, I kind of kicked and screamed when people said, no, we need to get into social media. I said, I don't know. I think what we're doing here is fine and whatnot to a certain degree. But, you know, it's been a tremendous decision in, moving forward. So I think it's essential for anyone's organizational growth in the public health field. Health literacy is such an important public health issue today. And to be able to use social media in a way that we don't, it's not really about self-promoting who we are. We really have a very little ego in all this. And it's really about getting helpful information into the hands of individuals that you've heard about many of our speakers before me today. How do we change those behaviors? How do we have healthier lifestyles and healthier behaviors? We have a voice, we have a personality, we experiment with new ideas, and we use the F word, we have fun quite a bit in terms of doing all this stuff. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Colbert. I'd like to invite the panel members to come here, up here, because we're going to take some questions from the audience. And while they're getting up here, I want to recognize Karen Upstill, who was my co-person in crime trying to put this presentation together. And in fact, it was her inspiration and encouragement that said, no, we can do this, and this is really important. So thank you, Karen. So we'd like to take a few questions. A lot of diversity in what was presented today. So can we hear from who has a question. Yes, Gary.
Several years ago, it's probably been 4 years ago, I was in a session with Dr. Rima Rudd, who I think you probably all know, and at that point she said there had been very little research done in video, media, much of the research done in print material, I think. So that part of the question is, has that begun to change? And the second part of the question is, your Vimeo links, your YouTube links, which obviously are video, are those primarily videos that instruct and teach about self-literacy, or have you picked some examples of videos that are related to health topics that meet your criteria of best practice?
Do you want to I'll repeat the question. So kind of two questions. One is the content of the Vimeo that Dr. Colbert talked about, and the other is, has there been research in, do you mean like the evaluation of?
Evaluation of video.
Video media.
In terms of health literacy.
And is that directed to Dr. Colbert or to?
I believe so.
Sure. Okay.
Let me stand up.
Yeah.
Thank you for the question. There's not been a great deal of evaluation done in the use of other mediums like video. I think we're going to begin to see that, particularly with our work. We have underway 31 demonstration projects across the state of Missouri, and one of them is a huge video initiative, and we need now just to finally begin to measure its effectiveness. The film series in Vimeo is a collection, so they're both instructional, they're sometimes disease-related, so it runs the gamut. But they're actually cataloged also, and will be, in terms of how you can actually access and look at them. So it's a combination, and we continue to add to them. We ask people to share with us, but I think that there's some things in there for everybody. Thanks.
I'd like to add to that. Our Health Communication Research Center working with health literacy in Missouri. Our Health Communication Research Center actually is just wrapped up two large studies about Facebook and Twitter and health literacy specifically, doing a content analysis of what's out there, who's on there, what are they doing, what are the types of the people, and those are actually working their ways into journal articles as we speak. So we'll tweet them once they're out there. But there's a lot more research coming up, just a little slow on the uptake.
Regarding the use of video and the prevalence of research surrounding video, I think it's important to note, too, that it doesn't have to be an either-or type of thing of video versus print. So we have a paper that came out in Patient Education and Counseling just in the last couple of months that kind of started to do like a study of these different types of media. And I think it's important to note that it might depend on the context, what you're hoping that the patient will achieve, if it's a one-time decision versus learning about a self-care behavior that you may have to, maybe it is better in some cases, to have a tangible material that you can take home and go back and refer to. With the internet videos, that might start to have some of that effect as well, where it's something that a patient can see at home versus just when they're at the doctor's office or wherever they are where they're learning this information.
Yes, Karen.
This is a fantastic presentation. I was particularly impacted by the 12% figure of the healthcare system served. And this panel and the presentation of social media communications also speaks to the 12% or actually less, 2% of people really that are fluent in social media. How do we move that over to the 88% and also through systems like hospitals, primary care? Where do the most vulnerable patients come? That's their gateway to community health clinics. And how can we put some applications like terminals and, you know, when they first come in to sign in an emergency room, that they can start to see, you know, pictures, that cross-cultural issues around, you know, that's to me the largest challenge we have.
Okay, Karen's question is about the 88% of adults who are not understanding a lot of the health information, and how do we move the needle on that group and meet them at different access points? Am I capturing it there? Do you have a person on the group that you would like to?
Well, Dr. Colbert, I think he's trying to do that across systems, possibly with providers and healthcare systems, and I think the media is another one, again, but you know,
Who would like to?
Thanks for the question. On the systems piece, I think there's going to be a career that's going to be called a not too distant future, a hospital health literate expert, where he or she is going to really become experts on how do you convince hospitals to redo themselves so people can navigate them. And I mean, we currently work with clinics, hospitals, the like. There's a terrific tool that's just been introduced by ARC, the Universal Precaution Toolkit. And that's our starting point with everything we do with Health Literacy Missouri. Again, part of what's occurred, you know, is we do this wonderful research, we create these wonderful reports, and they sit on shelves. And Health Literacy Missouri is sworn to not reinventing things and really taking the state-of-the-art work that's out there. So we use that, and that's a really good example of how you can put that in the hands of people who oversee anything from a simple office to a large, you know, multi-system hospital, and be able to, on a step-by-step, how do you make your organization more health literacy friendly? So we try to use tools like that, and we try to, you know, not reinvent things. And I think we're working with everything from fairly qualified health centers within the city of St. Louis to the largest hospital system, the BJC system, to redo their ambulatory care centers using health literacy principles. It's going to happen because hospitals are going to be more accountable. In 2011, people are going to start paying attention to quality and safety. They need health literacy to make these kinds of changes. So there's going to be a lot of work for people in this room that are involved in health literacy, trying to work with institutions to make themselves more health literacy friendly. And people are starting to understand that. I think, you know, people are starting to, if people in Missouri can understand that health literacy is part of the solution, people nationwide can understand that. I mean, you heard some of the large barriers that we have to confront in terms of behaviors and health outcomes, poverty level and the like, and health literacy is gaining traction in Missouri. And again, I think it just shows that with a coordinated state effort that's sustained, you know, other states can make these kinds of gains also.
I think you had a question. The question is do any members of the panel have any data or evidence of how health literacy is addressing health disparities throughout the nation and maybe even broader than that? Is anyone on the panel? Carolyn?
That's a great question. There is a growing body of literature that is linking health literacy to a lot of health disparities across the spectrum. We know that health literacy generally impacts those, it impacts everyone, but particularly those that are our most vulnerable populations, racial and ethnic groups, low socioeconomic status, the elderly, and others. But there is definitely a growing research. We at CDC don't have the data right in front of you, but there is definitely a growing research that's able to tie health literacy to health disparities beyond education, beyond socioeconomic status, to show that health literacy is indeed an important factor. And if we can work towards making shifts in that, we can definitely work towards closing some of those gaps.
I just go one step further. There's a classic study the AMA published that shows that health literacy is a stronger predictor, social determinant of health, than either age, race, ethnic status, socioeconomic. And so it's a very, very powerful, and to be able to, because it cuts across everything, and it doesn't limit itself to, you know, one of these other aspects as a social determinant. It really does cut across. So there's it's been documented now for some time. People continue to document it, and very, very important in terms of all that.
Yes, in the back. No, you. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Definition around health literacy. I wonder if anybody's thinking about evaluating sources of health information as a part of that process. I think as people are increasingly turning to the internet, and also just the healthy beliefs in communities are not always consistent with everything that's faced now. So that's my comment. And then my fourth is about the use of mobile technology and other beyond social media, which I think is a really exciting way to go about it. Is anybody thinking about mobile, handheld technology? I know that broadband access is problematic in a lot of areas, but a cell phone kind of technology, is that a better avenue?
Okay, so the question is, for any member of the panel, your thoughts on mobile technology rather than some of the other forms of technology that might be used and how beneficial in weighing that out. I don't know if, maybe John?
Mobile is definitely something that is a possible solution. The problem comes, while almost everybody regardless, it seems like almost everyone regardless of socioeconomic status has a cell phone, what it comes down to, so you can get them text messages, and there's been plenty of research about texting people and doing that kind of intervention. The problem comes with smartphones and the costs affiliated with those. So to get to Twitter, to get to Facebook, you almost need a smartphone with the applications. I think as more competition increases, hopefully some of these plans will get cheaper so more people can afford them. But right now you're still talking about a higher SES that can have that kind of smartphone for the mobile ability. So like I said, I think a text campaign would work, but the social media stuff, you really need an access point like a church, a library, a school right now for a lot of these, especially in Missouri for the rural populations and the lower income.
And just to your comment about evaluating credible, the credibility of sources, while that's not in the definition, it's definitely a piece of health literacy that we feel is critical. The National Health Education Standards, which I was talking about in the Goal 3 about incorporating school-based, is really includes information on getting children to understand how to decipher credible versus non-credible sources and information. So that's definitely with the world of social media and mobile technology, and the internet is a broad source of information, that is a key piece that, even though it's not in the definition, is a critical piece to us addressing the issue.
And for what it's worth, my two cents on a decade from now, and again, we need to think in these terms because, health literacy didn't, happen overnight, and it's not going to go away overnight. So it's really a generational change. So it's about working with new moms, about working with children. So when you think in those terms, smartphones 10 years from now, who knows what that means, okay? But one would assume, okay, we are going to have this information in the palm of our hands. So once we begin to figure out how to communicate in a way that people can understand, that smartphone is just a way to get that information in your hand. So I actually think once we can tackle the bigger question, 10 years from now, smartphones are going to be affordable, accessible, and they're going to be worldwide. So it's really about doing the hard part, and I think that the smartphone will really help deliver this health literacy-friendly information in the next generation.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for the question. So the question is, to what extent and how are people on the panel addressing issues of accessibility and inclusiveness of people with disabilities in the whole health literacy arena?
Carolyn? Good.
Well, we did consider, as we were addressing the national, including the National Action Plan, to consider the variety of populations that needed to be addressed in that. CDC does have an office that focuses on disabilities, individuals with disabilities, and providing that information. So we have been taking steps there in that organization and how that information gets translated and provided to people in ways that are meaningful, that are accessible, that include the parameters that are needed there. This is a challenging issue, I think. I think it's we often just dissemination in period for those populations that have different needs than when we just like to post stuff on a website. It's easy to post stuff on a website, or it's easy to pass out information at different points, but that's a true area, I think, for opportunity and growth. I don't know if you have something to add to that, but it's a key point that I think we could be doing more work to address, certainly.
And I would add that, no, we're not doing nearly enough, and we need to be your partner, because you have a lot to teach us. You've been extraordinarily effective, and it really came home to us. I was giving a talk recently, and a gentleman raised his hand, and he said, could you slow down, because I'm blind, and I can't see the slides. And we as an organization, it's really kind of the elephant in the room, all disabilities, particularly the mentally challenged, and health literacy really needs to include that. And again, I don't think anybody is doing enough to address that. But I'm hopeful, as we see a lot of this money that's being released as part of the new Healthcare Reform Act, that some of it goes to include health literacy and will be as inclusive as possible. So thanks for raising that question.
I think we're at the end of our session, so thank you so very much for coming and your great attention this morning.